Dr. William Luther Pierce, 1999. Shuffling Toward the Slaughter.
Hello. Last week, we talked about some specific examples of the way in which the bosses of the controlled media deliberately give most Americans a severely distorted perception of what is happening in the world around them, of what is fashionable, and so on. In particular, I talked about the crooked way in which the media bosses report interracial crime. They heavily overemphasize any attacks on non-whites by whites and minimize or ignore attacks on whites by non-whites. They do this in order to create the false impression in the public's mind that most interracial crime is white on non-white, whereas, in fact, exactly the opposite is true. The reason the media bosses deliberately create this false impression in the public mind is to generate a sense of racial guilt in whites, to keep them on the defensive in all matters relating to race, to keep them off balance and confused as the non-white assault on America continues through immigration and other means. The aim is to persuade white Americans to give up their freedom of speech, their freedom of association, their freedom to keep and bear arms for self-defense, in order to relieve their sense of white guilt and gain a false sense of security by stamping out dissent on racial matters. In summary, the aim of the media bosses in distorting their coverage of the news is to silence and disarm white Americans and keep them on the defensive. And that is their aim because they are Jews, and they are reaching for even more control than they already have. This is the historic modus operandi of the Jews. They are outsiders everywhere except in Israel. And when they first appear in any Gentile society and begin reaching for power, they are resisted. The society treats the Jews as outsiders, as aliens, and attempts to keep them from gaining control. The Jewish method of countering this opposition is to work quietly to accumulate as much wealth as possible. At the same time, they work to corrupt the society's leaders with money and to sow dissension among the masses, to set one social class against another, to break up the society's solidarity and its cohesiveness so that there will be less resistance to their penetration of the society. During the latter half of the 19th century and the first part of the 20th century, fomenting class warfare has been their most successful technique in Europe. In Russia, for example, they would have had difficulty in corrupting the enormously wealthy aristocracy with bribes. But their technique of fomenting class warfare succeeded in destroying Russian society and letting the Jews seize control through their Marxist movement. In the United States, on the other hand, where the political leaders are essentially hucksters and lawyers, and the working class is relatively well off compared to Russia, the Jews have had much more success with corruption than with their attempts to foment class warfare. Many people who have studied the history of communism and have become aware of the enormously disproportionate presence of Jews in that movement have come to the erroneous conclusion that Jews are inherently communists. The truth of the matter is that Jews are no more inherently communist than they are inherently capitalist. Jews are inherently acquisitive, ethnocentric, and cohesive, and they have a parasitic mode of existence. They become communists when that serves their purpose of breaking into a Gentile society and gaining control. And they become capitalists when capitalism serves their purpose better than communism. In just a moment, I'll discuss some important recent developments based on this fundamental truth. First, however, I want to add a bit to our discussion of last week. The Jews' aim, remember, is to destroy Gentile solidarity, to sow confusion, to generate feelings of guilt, to morally disarm white society so that it will be easy pickings. And in the last half of the 20th century, their principal weapon for this purpose, more important than corruption or class warfare, has been their control of the mass media, of news and entertainment. For week after week, I've cited very specific evidence of the way in which they use their control of the media to confuse and demoralize the white public. Before I get to the new developments I mentioned, I just want to bring you up to date with another example. On August 13th, a 50-year-old white man, Gregory Griffith, was beaten, kicked, and stomped into a coma by a group of young blacks in Jacksonville, Florida. The blacks had been standing around on the sidewalk, jiving among themselves, and they decided to kill the next white person who came along. Gregory Griffith was it. Griffith died from the stomping on August 26th in Jacksonville's University Medical Center. Have you heard anything about this murder? I'll bet you haven't, unless you live in the immediate vicinity of Jacksonville. Do you think you would have heard anything if Griffith had been black and a group of white skinheads had decided to kill the next black who came down the sidewalk? I'll bet you wouldn't have heard anything but that since August 13th. It would have been on network television every single night. Bill Clinton and Janet Reno and the head of every major Jewish so-called human rights organization would have been on television too, looking grim and waving a stern forefinger at us and lecturing us about white racism and hate crime. You remember that last week I told you about the three Indians who tied a rope around a white man's neck and dragged him behind their pickup truck in South Dakota until they thought he was dead. There's been very little media coverage of that dragging since then, and what coverage there has been has consisted mainly of arguments as to why it wasn't really a so-called hate crime. In the Jacksonville case, there can be no doubt whatsoever. The arrested blacks confessed to police that they killed Griffith solely because he was white, that they had agreed among themselves to kill the next white person who came down the sidewalk. So don't expect to see anything about it on television. They certainly wouldn't want to spoil all of the propaganda they're planning for the upcoming trial in Bryan, Texas, of the second defendant in last year's Jasper dragging case. So you tell me, why do the Jewish media bosses do this sort of thing if it's not for the purpose of keeping the white couch potatoes feeling guilty and defensive about being white? Really, confusion and moral disarmament and social breakdown are their purpose. Television makes it much easier for them, but they were at it a long time before television came along. Let me read you something which has been a part of their tradition for more than 2,700 years. This was written by one of the Jews' most revered religious leaders, Isaiah. In the 19th chapter of the book of Isaiah, he spelled out the formula the Jews always have used to break up a Gentile society and gain control. Isaiah wrote, and I quote, "And I will set the Egyptians against the Egyptians, and they shall fight everyone against his brother, and everyone against his neighbor, city against city, and kingdom against kingdom. And the spirit of Egypt shall fail in the midst thereof, and I will destroy the council thereof, and they shall seek to the idols, and to the charmers, and to them that have familiar spirits, and to the wizards." End quote. That was the formula 2,700 years ago. Now for some new developments. I've told you on several earlier broadcasts about the growing problem of Jewish organized crime in America. So let me tell you again, it's still growing, fast. This problem is interesting to us far beyond the interest we might have in, say, a resurgence of the mafia. A resurgence of the mafia would simply be a crime story. Interesting, but not absolutely critical for our survival. The growth of Soviet Jewish organized crime, the Organizatsiya, they call it, is interesting to us first for the same reason the non-reporting by the Jewish media of the racial murder of Gregory Griffith in Jacksonville is interesting. The media bosses simply do not like to talk about the Organizatsiya, despite the fact that its operations in the United States already dwarf those of all the other criminal organizations operating here. When they do talk about Jewish organized crime, they never refer to it as Jewish. They always call it Russian organized crime. And you know, this refusal to talk honestly about Jewish organized crime is more than an attempt to protect their fellow Jews who happen to be gangsters. Just like the refusal to talk honestly about interracial crime is more than an attempt to shield black criminals. The real aim in both cases is to maintain a false image, a false belief, which they have created in the minds of most white Americans. In the case of interracial crime, the false belief is that in most interracial crimes, heterosexual white males are the offenders and non-whites are the victims. In the case of Jewish organized crime, the false image is that of the Jew as gentle and inoffensive, as more cultured and more moral than his Gentile neighbors, and especially as a victim rather than as an aggressor or predator. We all read news stories occasionally about rabbis caught smuggling drugs or laundering money, but the way they're reported makes the offenders seem like exceptions to the rule of Jewish rectitude and inoffensiveness. However, when one looks closely at what Jewish organized crime has done and is doing to Russia, and what it is beginning to do to the United States, an entirely different image of the Jews and their relationship to their hosts emerges. Let's look first at Russia. The Organizatsiya literally runs the country. It is bleeding Russia of its remaining wealth, pulling hundreds of billions of dollars out of the country and stashing it in other countries. The rule in the Russian government today is total corruption. The police know who the gangsters are. The Russian army and the Russian police could have every organized criminal in Russia, from billionaire media mogul Boris Abramovich Berezovsky on down, hanging from meat hooks within 48 hours, if they were permitted to act. But Russian President Boris Yeltsin and the other politicians around him will not permit it. Yeltsin protects the Organizatsiya, and the Organizatsiya supports and enriches him. Do you remember back in 1996 how the Clinton government was pushing as hard as it could for Yeltsin's re-election? There were promises of financial assistance to Russia if Yeltsin remained as president, and hints that there would be none if he were defeated. And of course, the big television networks in Russia were solidly behind Yeltsin. Today, much is made of the rivalry between media moguls Boris Berezovsky, who controls the largest network, ORT, and Vladimir Gusinsky, who controls NTV, the second largest. But in 1996, both ORT and NTV were 100% for Yeltsin. And of course, both Berezovsky and Gusinsky are Jews. Gusinsky, in fact, is the titular head of Russia's entire Jewish community. In 1996, the big fear of the media bosses and the Clintonistas here was that a genuine Russian patriot, a Russian nationalist, might win. The Russian people, unfortunately, don't seem to be much more perceptive or far-sighted than the American people, and the solid support of Russia's Jew-dominated television plus the promise of more financial aid from America, kept Yeltsin in power. Or to be more accurate, Yeltsin remained in office, and the Jewish gangsters around him remained in power. Whenever any Russian official begins to make a move against the gangsters, Yeltsin fires him and brings someone else in. And the gangsters continue bleeding Russia dry at the rate of hundreds of billions of dollars a year. The Central Intelligence Agency repeatedly warned the Clinton administration that any financial aid money sent to Russia with Yeltsin in office would end up in the hands of the Jewish thieves who are effectively running the country. But to the Clintonistas, so long as the thieves are Jewish, that's A-OK. In September 1997, the Global Organized Crime Project at Washington's Center for Strategic and International Studies released a report titled Russian Organized Crime. The Global Organized Crime Project was headed by Judge William Webster, who formerly had headed both the FBI and the CIA. Both Bill Clinton and Al Gore dismissed Webster's report on organized crime in Russia, and other members of the Clinton administration were ordered to ignore the report and the CIA's warnings. Billions of dollars from the International Monetary Fund kept pouring into Russia and into the hands of the Jewish thieves around Boris Yeltsin. And the Russian people became poorer and hungrier. The Jewish media in this country would have liked to have kept the situation in Russia covered up, but the lid is beginning to come off a bit now. Such huge sums of money are being taken out of Russia by the Jews, including most of the emergency aid provided by the IMF, and being laundered in Israel and America that people are noticing. The scandal involving the laundering by the Bank of New York and Bank Boston Corporation of tens of billions of dollars stolen from the Russian people by Jewish crime bosses with the connivance of Boris Yeltsin has made headlines recently following the FBI sting operation that the Clinton administration inadvertently failed to halt. The stories about the massive money laundering operation, which appeared in the New York Times and USA Today late last month, referred to all of the criminals as Russians rather than as Jews, of course. You have to read the Israeli papers like Haaretz and Yediot Ahronot to see them identified as Jews. One would think that someone in the Congress would insist on a full-scale congressional investigation. I mean, here is the Clinton administration solidly tied to massive international corruption, tied to the impoverishment and destabilization of a foreign nuclear power, tied to the bringing of racketeers and racketeering money into the United States on a huge scale. And the Clintonistas cannot claim that they didn't know, that they weren't warned. What a wonderful campaign issue for the Republicans to use. So why are all of the Republican politicians sitting on their hands and pretending not to notice what's going on, just like the Democrats? Are they trying to avoid embarrassing a bunch of crooked, quote, Russians, unquote? Hardly. Are they already on the take from the Jewish crime bosses like the Democrats are? Probably not yet. But they all understand, all of them, that this is not a Russian issue. It's a Jewish issue. They all understand that, and so they're afraid to touch it. What does this mean for our future? For one thing, it means that the Organizatsiya will continue building its presence in America. It's already by far the largest and most dangerous criminal organization in America, and it is now clear that America's government will not move against it, and America's news media will not rouse the people against it. The Jews have softened up America, have broken down American society, have corrupted American institutions to the point where there will be almost no resistance to their further penetration and takeover. No Republican politician, from George Bush Jr. on down, will stand against them. Instead, the Republicans will have their hands out for their share of the loot, just the way the Democrats do, and just the way Boris Yeltsin does. One difference between the behavior of the Jewish crime bosses relative to America and their behavior relative to Russia that we will see is that the Jews are pulling money out of Russia and bringing it to the United States. They have bled Russia almost dry, but there's still much blood to be sucked from America. America will be the next center for Jewish organized crime. And in America, we'll be seeing much more of the viciousness and violence with which these Jews operate as they gain self-confidence here. The same sort of murderous thuggery which characterizes their presence in Russia, in Germany, and in other places where they dominate criminal activity and where they butcher whole families with the same callousness displayed by a slaughterhouse worker butchering a herd of cattle. When they have trouble with some of their white slaves, with some of the girls they have forced into prostitution, they think nothing of slitting the throats of a dozen of them in order to terrify the others back into submission. I mean, these girls are only goyim, only shiksas, so why not treat them like the cattle they are? For a while, the FBI will carry on its investigations of the organizatsiya, and the CIA will issue its warnings, and there will be stories in the New York Times about, quote, Russian, unquote, gangsters, but by and large, no real move will be made to stop them or to warn the American people. The American political system already has been corrupted beyond the point of no return, and the mass media, which are used to control the thinking and the behavior of the American masses, already are almost completely in Jewish hands. Just to be on the safe side, however, the Jews are continuing to wrap up a few loose ends in the area of media control. An example was the takeover this week of CBS by Viacom and its boss, Sumner Redstone. Not that CBS wasn't already thoroughly Jewish, but there was always the danger that some very rich Gentile maverick might try to buy it and change its flavor. Now it's safely in the hands of the Jewish media boss who gave us MTV, Sumner Redstone. To reiterate, the classic Jewish technique for infiltrating and softening up a Gentile society so that it can be taken over is reaching its final stages in America. No mainstream American institution will put up any substantial resistance to the completion of this process. Not the government, not the Christian churches, not the military leadership, and certainly not the mass media. All have been corrupted or taken over, and the American people will continue shuffling meekly toward the slaughterhouse so that the beast can drain the last drop of blood from them. Just as they were afraid to speak out against the massive non-white immigration which has changed the racial complexion of America for fear of being called racists, so will they also remain silent and non-resisting as Jewish organized crime spreads its tentacles over America for fear of being called anti-Semitic. If the beast is to be killed, we'll have to do it ourselves. Thanks for being with me again today.